Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to yet another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and we are coming to you from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank in Alpharetta. Today, you're more connected than ever, and whether it's your friends or your family or your life, Renaissance understands how you bank, offering the mobile banking services that you need. Renaissance also knows that sometimes you need to speak to real people with real answers, and that's why Renaissance has more than 190 convenient locations throughout the South ready to serve you. For more information, go to renaissancebank.com, Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. Now I want to turn to a great guest, Robert Steele. He is the CEO of the Enterprise Zone, among other things, and we'll get into those in a second. Robert, welcome.
John, thank you very much. It's great to be here. I've heard a lot about you and the show, and I'm excited to be a part.
Well, I'm excited you're here anyway, despite what you've heard. So thank you for that.
Thank you for that, my friend.
So tell us a little bit about you and tell us about your background and how you got to where you are, and then we'll get into what you're doing now.
Sure. Well, John, I grew up in Columbus, Georgia, so I'm a Georgia boy, born and raised. I love the South. I love being back in Georgia. I just moved back to Georgia from Las Vegas, Nevada.
You were lost, huh?
I was not lost. I was actually having a lot of fun.
Okay. Glad to have you back, though,
thank
man.
Thank you. I was not part of the Strip. I didn't go to the Strip. I played golf. I worked and whatever, but it was not a Strip experience, to be candid.
Of course.
But I just moved back in November of this past year, and I'm excited to be back because I love – and one of the reasons I moved back was I wanted to get back to a more business community instead of the Strip and gambling and all the other things that are out there, even though the Raiders just showed up and that's going to, or at least next year, it's going to be fun.
Yep.
Now they've got the hockey team and a few other things. So it's really a happening community, but I love Atlanta. I love the South and I love being back near family.
That's great. And you're in North Fulton, so you've moved to the right part of Atlanta. So congratulations on that.
I am a taxpayer. It took me about 6 months to get all my documents and everything transferred over, but I am now a full taxpayer of North Fulton.
I love it. Now you had a sports career before your business career. Tell us about that.
I did. John, when I graduated from the University of North Alabama in 1978, I actually thought I was just going to go into the insurance business right out of college, and a funny thing happened along the way to graduation. 2 weeks before graduation, the Dallas Cowboys showed up on campus and said, "Would you like to be a Dallas Cowboy?" And I had zero clue they were going to do this. They ran me through some time trials, did a whole bunch of stuff. They had the draft. I was not drafted. I ended up signing as a free agent. And of course, John, I was one of 80 free agents trying to make the world champion Dallas Cowboys.
Wow.
In 1978. And of course, their four receivers that played in Super Bowl XII were Drew Pearson, Tony Hill, Butch Johnson, and the other starter, Golden Richards. When I showed up to training camp, I was number 20 on a depth chart of 20, including those four. So if you've ever played sports, and anybody that's listening, if you've ever played sports, you do not want to be number 20 on a depth chart of 20 when you start out.
The odds aren't good.
The odds are terrible. And so, but I actually, John, I'm a positive guy. So I looked at that depth chart only one time during training camp that day. And I said, guess what? I got nowhere to go but up. All these other guys can either be cut or demoted. And if they're demoted, they're cut anyway. So I said, I'm positive, I'm happy, and I'm going to make the team.
And the next thing you know,
6 weeks later, the Cowboys traded Golden Richards to Chicago, and I became a member of the world champion Dallas Cowboys.
Wow. That's awesome. So tell us a little bit about the lessons you learned from that. I mean, there's some obvious ones that we could come up with. You know, optimism, belief in yourself, what have you, but going through that experience, what did that teach you about yourself?
Well, I'll go right to the core is. I wrote an article right after I got out of Ball, and it was entitled "What Landry, Reeves, and Ditka Taught Me About ... Business." And so if you look at Coach Landry, he was the consummate CEO. He coached the coaches. He let the coaches coach the players. The media thought he was aloof. He wasn't aloof. He was doing his job. Dan Reeves, who coached here with the Falcons, is a great guy, but he was kind of the student of the game. You know, he felt like he had to work harder than everybody else. He had to study more. He had to do all these things, but he was the consummate student of the game, and he knew every play, knew every situation. And I learned certainly a lot from that. Mike Ditka, Coach Ditka, is just a little crazy, but he is also so passionate. And he will run through the wall in front of you and expect you to run through the wall with him.
Mm.
So that's what I learned from that. But the flip side of that is the organization of the Cowboys was the consummate business example of life. They were Moneyball before the Oakland A's ever thought about Moneyball. Seriously. They did things that no one else was doing. I mean, if you look at Tex Schramm, Tom Landry and Gil Brandt, the triumvirate that Clint Murchison, the owner, hired they started in 1960, so 1959. Basically, Mr. Murchison sat the three of them down and said, Mr. Schramm, you're going to run the football operations. You do not mess with the football team. Mr. Landry, you're going to be the coach. You're going to run football operations. And Gil Brandt, you're going to manage the draft. They never, for 29 seasons, never got in each other's way. And I will submit to you that if you want to see the epitome of a great organization, it was the Dallas Cowboys from 1960 to 1989.
Folks knew their lane, they knew their competency, and they stuck to it.
And they did their job. Mm-hmm. And of course, what I also like to say is, if you look back at the Cowboys actually, and Gil was responsible for most of this, the Cowboys drafted high-quality players. They signed high-quality players. You very seldom had guys that really went AWOL. You didn't have any Antonio Browns in the world as you have today that get off the rails. We had a few, but in 29 seasons, having a handful with the number that came through is phenomenal in and of itself. So they really did look at the football talent for sure, but they looked at the character of the person. And that was something I learned by being around them, watching, just studying the game. And I did. I felt like I got an MBA just studying the Cowboys when I was there for that season.
Well, and I guess your mind was open to the business side of it because that's where you thought you would be, right? I mean, at that point in time.
So I had just graduated with my class in 1978. I had a business degree in marketing. I had a minor in economics and finance. My head was business. It wasn't football at the time. It became football once I realized I had a shot at making the team. And then I focused as much as I possibly could every day. And I'll share one more story from the University of North Alabama. I know we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I did not know a single person in my life that had ever played professional sports prior to the moment I signed. There was a guy at the University of North Alabama who was now a head coach at a high school in Florence, Harlan Hill, who was Rookie of the Year for the Bears in 1954. So Harlan was, Coach Hill on the phone. I said, Coach, I've just signed with the Cowboys. I have no idea what I'm going to do, and how I'm going to make the team, but I need some advice. And you're the only person that's in the community that I could talk to. So he agreed to meet with me the next day. I went out to to Brooks High School. He sat me down. Actually, he didn't sit me down. We walked out to the football field. But he didn't carry a football with him, so I was kind of concerned about what we were going to be doing, right?
Right.
So we sat on the bleachers, and we talked for 3.5 hours. And the gist of what he said was this, Robert, you're a rookie. They do not want to hear from you. They want to see you play. Keep your mouth shut and do your job. The second thing he said was, you need to do something spectacular every day or you will not be there the next day. And finally he said, be coachable. If they want you to play special teams, play special teams. If they want you to run through a brick wall, go run through a brick wall, whatever it takes. And so funny little sidebar is when I did my physical for training camp, they had me sign 14 waivers on all my body parts.
Wow.
And because I'd had previous two knee surgeries and a whole bunch of other injuries,
gotcha.
They made me sign waivers. And I basically looked at the doctor and I said, why don't you just give me a full body waiver? I'll sign it. I said, in fact, we were on the 14th floor of a hotel. And I said, if you promise me that if I jumped off this building and I would live to survive and play, I'll do it right now. And anyway, the rest is history.
That got his attention, I guess.
It did.
Yeah. So, one more question on sports. So you ended up 20th on the depth chart, making the team, and then in a Super Bowl.
I did get to play in Super Bowl 13. I'll give you a funny little sidebar. This was a Drew Pearson story. Coach Landry called the roll every evening at 6 p.m., and he would call Staubach's name. And, of course, Roger Staubach, being the Navy background guy, Heisman Trophy winner, all that, he would say present. So then he would say steal. And every night I couldn't say present, so I said here. So I was supposed to get cut like the first cut, right? Well, I didn't get cut the first cut, nor the second, nor the third, nor the fifth, nor the ninth, nor the 12th. So Landry's called a roll right at the end of training camp, and Landry says, Staubach, present, steal, here. Before Landry could call the next name, Drew Pearson in the back of the room said, steal, here? Why are you steal here? And just like you just laughed, Landry, who was not known for laughing,
right,
laughed.
I love it.
So anyway, the title of my book is called Steal Here. And by the way, I'll put a shameless plug in. If anybody would like
please
a copy
do,
of
yeah.
the book Steal Here, happy to send someone the copy of the book.
Yeah, we'll have that in the show notes. And that's your Twitter handle, which I think
it is
cool, of course.
So, Steal Here.
Yeah, so great stuff. But now you've talked a little bit about this, but your sports career, folks that have been in professional sports go a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. You went down the sales route, really. I mean, a lot of your career has been sales.
It has. When I got out of ball, my parents and my grandparents were in the insurance and financial services business. My dad was a serial entrepreneur, which is why I ended up building some companies, because he got passionate about the real estate business with his background from insurance, and I got passionate about the IT services sector and building products. But anyway, I decided to come back to Columbus and figure out what my dad had been doing all these years. And I'd actually previously, John, gotten licensed in the insurance business. I actually been licensed since 1976 to sell insurance. So I had no experience in sales at the time. And so I did exactly what I did with sports. I immersed myself into taking courses and training being mentored and looking at people that were successful. And I set goals. You know, one of the things that, I've got another story if we have time to tell it, about setting goals. But I'm a consummate believer that if you are going to achieve something, you've got to set your roadmap to do it and then go do it. And then you may not hit every single item in your roadmap, but chances are you're going to get to the port that you wanted to go to.
Now, reflect for a moment, if you would, on the process of starting a business. What are the things – you come from an entrepreneurial family. What are some of the things that you've learned about what folks underestimate when they start a business?
Probably the thing that I learned quickest is that I was pretty good in the insurance business. I made the $1 million round table every year, did what I had to do. What I was not prepared for is learning that when I started a company, and I started several, is I no longer was just an idea guy or just a sales guy. I have to be CEO. I have to be COO. I have to be everything-o, and janitor in included. And so most people are not aware that you've got to wear about 17 hats as a startup before you have enough money to really hire your first or second or third hire, unless you go raise money. If you raise money, you're giving away most of the idea because, especially as a startup, you're giving away most of the equity the day you start.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the first thing. The second thing is, and I do believe this, I believe the CEO has to be the number one salesman in the organization or saleswoman in the organization. It's not that you do all the sales work every time, but you have to be the biggest cheerleader. You have to be passionate about the product. If your kind of neck is on the line, that if you don't meet payroll next week, you know your company's gone. Those are critical times, and so you have to be passionate. Most are, but you also have to be passionate about the process. Most people get caught up into the idea. They want to build a product. They think all I got to do is build a product, and they will come. It's not how it works, especially when you have so much noise in every industry around. You know, if you go to the internet today, and we've all seen it, I'm the best at this and I'm the best at that, and I've got the number one product in all of life. And yes, you can say it. The question is, can you back it up?
Now, Robert, you mentioned the worries of making payroll when you're in the middle of a turnaround. You've had some pretty significant turnarounds in your career, and we don't have time to get into all of them, but it would be great for you to tell a couple of stories on what you've done there.
Can I give you one very tough story?
Yeah.
I woke up one Friday morning, and I was 1 week away from payroll, and I did not have any money. I literally did not have a dime to my name to make $50,000 of payroll. Strangely enough, I get a phone call, and this guy from D.C. wanted to have me come up and meet and talk to him about a strategic alliance. And I said, fine, I'll book a ticket for the following Monday. And I said, you know, I need 7 days to buy the ticket and all this. Well, I didn't need 7 days to buy the ticket. I needed 7 days to figure out if I was going to have a company on Friday, right?
Right.
So he convinced me to buy the ticket. He even told me, he said, Robert, I need you here Wednesday. And I said, fine. I said, the price of the ticket is like $500 difference. He said, I'll pay the difference. So we get to the meeting. We talk for 2 hours. He says, let's go get a beer. I said, well, I don't drink beer, but I'm happy to go get a burger with you. And so we go to the restaurant, and he says, Robert, why did you come here? I said, well, you asked me to. He said, no. Why'd you come? I said, well, you said you wanted to build a strategic alliance. He said, yeah, but that's not why you came. He said, what's your problem? I said, well, Carl, if I don't come up with $50,000 by Friday, this is Wednesday, I have to close the doors of the company. He says, okay, if I can solve that problem for you, would you relax and let's go to another conversation? I said, yes. 2 days later, he wrote a check for $50,000, and the company stayed in business until we sold it 2 years later.
Wow.
So I know what it's like to wake up one morning knowing that you don't have money in the bank to pay payroll.
To be up against the wall. And was that an IT services company? You mentioned IT services.
It was.
Okay.
It was a benefits administration company back in the 99-2000 timeframe. That those kind of companies, every company, a SaaS-based application was coming up out of the woodworks. And, you know, of course, what happened was, and that what happened there was, you had the crash of the internet, the .com/.bomb world, and people were no longer funding just any idea for any amount of money.
Sure.
It got hard.
Right. We're speaking with Robert Steele, and he's the CEO of the Enterprise Zone. So let's get into the Enterprise Zone. Tell us a little bit about what you're up to right now.
So I started the Enterprise Zone, John. I was actually, again, why I do all my thinking at night, but I was laying in bed one night, and I started thinking about the next name for the next company. And I came up with the Enterprise Zone because I was thinking about the old Staples commercial about the easy button.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to make it easy for people to accelerate their business. And so I picked up the name, the Enterprise Zone, picked up the URL, TESBA.com. And TESBA stands for the Enterprise Zone, a business accelerator. And so I help companies figure out what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, and how to quickly change that to generate more top-line revenue and actually higher bottom-line profits.
Oh, well, that's attractive to everybody, right? Everybody has got that problem, right? But drilled a little deeper on the folks that you feel like you're most impactful to, it sounds like the companies that are really up against the wall might be a target for you.
They are. Most every company I've touched in the last 15 years have either had a problem with true sales and marketing, meaning they've got a great idea, a great team, but they haven't figured out their messaging, their storyboard, if you will, and how to really get that message across to the right audience. A lot of times companies, what I've found is they're chasing the wrong audience. They're chasing the wrong prospects. They think they've got an idea, but they actually didn't do a lot of their market intelligence to know who they really should be chasing. And I've had several companies that were chasing the wrong prospects with really the wrong message. And that's a double whammy against that company being successful. So my focus has always been, let's figure out where the company is. Let's figure out, is it a product issue? Is it an issue with their marketing or their messaging, their branding even, and actually who's telling the story in the marketplace? And it could be a personnel issue as well, because there's different people. Some people know how to sell to consumers, B2C. Some people know how to sell B2B, but some people know how to sell SMB and not, high enterprise or high value clients. And for some reason, all the training I've done, I have figured out how to do all three of those. And it's been, I've been fortunate to help companies that were doing no revenue, $600,000 in revenue, $6 million in revenue, and $50 million in revenue. And so I look back on my background and I don't see any, I have no hesitancy to take on a project if I believe I can help them. And I just walked away from three projects this past week of companies that I did not think I could help. I just will not take on.
Now, Robert, it sounds like, though, you're a little more, maybe a lot more, than people might hear that and think sales trainer, right, that you train a sales force. It sounds like you start at the top with a CEO and get their head right first. Pick out what I got wrong in there.
No. A lot of people, when they hear me speak, they think I'm just a sales guy.
Right.
And I get that. And you know what? I actually will wear that title with honor, to
right.
be honest with
sure.
you.
Sure.
And I've done a few things along that line. But I'm not a sales trainer. I'm really not a sales trainer. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I actually don't. In the past, I've not truly just trained people. I've mentored salespeople. I've actually trained people how to sell particular products, but I don't call myself a sales trainer. I actually am a process person. And most salespeople, the average COO would say, well, my salespeople don't know how to, dot I's and cross T's. I have to focus them. No, I actually understand a process around how to look at a problem, figure out how to literally dissect that problem, and then create the solution to make that happen. And yes, to your point earlier, 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100, it starts with the CEO or it starts with the C-suite, because they didn't start the company thinking that they were ever going to have any problems.
Right.
But when they get to a place where they have problems, then it could be financial problems, it could be organizational problems, it could be sales problems, it could be a personnel problem, but they didn't think they got there just by happenstance. In some cases, they may have. But the biggest issue is they have to kind of take a step back. I did a speech the other day for an organization in Dallas where I basically called the title of the speech Halftime. And so I started the talk by saying, you could be at the halftime of your career. You could be the halftime of the game. You could be halftime of the year for you as a company. But what is it about halftime that is so special for one team versus halftime that is so disastrous for another team? And I know I'm speaking to people in the Atlanta area, but there's a halftime that didn't go so well for the Atlanta Falcons.
Yes.
And that was against the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 51. And
you just had to bring that up, didn't you?
I didn't mean to, but that was my talk around halftime.
Right.
Because Coach Belichick, and I'm not a New England Patriots fan, by the way. I actually do not like them at all. But Coach Belichick is a master at halftime. So he prepared for 2 weeks, and actually they had prepared literally for the whole season for this game. And in 15 minutes time, he took his offense in one room, his defense in another, and totally changed the game plan.
Hmm.
Well, the Falcons had a different game plan as well. They just didn't change theirs enough. They went out and scored another touchdown, so it was 21-3 at halftime. Then it's 28-3 at the middle of the third quarter. And the question is, did Bill Belichick, you know, freak out and change his game plan again? No, he stuck to what he did in the half, in the locker room, and they went up to, you know, have 28 unanswered points, or 31 unanswered points.
Right. Yeah. So, but I think it's in, what you're, I think, getting at, though, again, back to that CEO,
mm-hmm.
Is that sometimes CEOs think they can outsource sales to the sales department, but you're really inviting them to dive in. And that's part of your remediation for companies that are turning around.
It is. I believe very strongly, and I said this earlier, the CEO has to be not only the biggest cheerleader, but in most cases, the best salesperson. I don't believe that a CEO, and again, go back to my Coach Landry example. Coach Landry was a master at coaching the coaches and letting the coaches coach the players. You need to do that as well. But in some cases, when a company is in a little bit of trouble, the CEO needs to take the gloves off and roll his sleeves up, his or her sleeves, and actually get into the trenches to make it happen. And so in many cases, it could be a tweak of the product. And I've done that in several cases. In some cases, it could be a tweak of the messaging or exactly who they're marketing to. And it's, I hate to say it, John, but it's there really are some really simple math equations that come about as a result of having some pretty frank conversations. And again, I call it going in the locker room because what goes on in the locker room stays in the locker room.
Yeah.
And so it really is a lot simpler than most people think it is if you really want to turn a company around. And I've been involved in six different turnarounds, and every single one of them were 30 to 90, 120 days away from closing their doors.
Wow. We're going to have you back to hear more of those stories. That sounds pretty cool. But I want to get on to Steel Center for Professional Selling. You're the founder, the namesake of this center that's at the University of North Alabama. Tell us a little bit about that.
So at UNA, where I graduated, the president came up to me and asked me to make a donation to the university. And it was fortunate that he didn't ask me to make a donation to the athletic department because I would not have made that donation. I'm a business guy. I'm not an athlete any longer. My golf game is telling of that. But I'm a business guy. So when the president asked me, Dr. Ken Kitts asked me to make a donation to the business school, I said yes without almost hesitation. But I said, Dr. Kitts, you need to understand, if I get involved, I get involved. I am not just a silent benefactor. I am going to be involved. So I am involved heavily. The University of North Alabama is one of 37 universities in the country that has a degree in professional selling. We have 100 students this year, which is a new record for us. We actually place 100% of our students. And I've got some great stories to tell you about. We don't have time to do that, but I've got some great stories about students that have that would have never pursued a career in professional selling, are now selling and are doing knocking it out of the park at some very large companies like Gartner and Enterprise Rent-A-Car and other places. I mean, knocking it out of the park.
That's wonderful.
So you can tell I'm a little bit passionate about my university.
Yeah, as you should be. And you've made a real impact in a way that is personal to you, and that's as opposed to just giving a name and getting your name on something, which happens all the time. Getting in there and really making an impact yourself personally, that's pretty cool. So congratulations for that.
Thank you. It's been a great – we have Dr. Tim Butler's there. And let me put a plug in for a local university. Kennesaw State, Dr. Terry Lowe, has one of the few that are the stellar organizations. So if you're in Atlanta, Georgia, or want to go to – Kennesaw State would be a fabulous place to go to school because Dr. Terry Lowe has probably – one of the finest, and I'm saying in no disrespect to UNA, as one of the finest, and we actually mimic what Dr. Lowe does at the university. Those guys are rock stars and gals.
That's great. Great information. Robert Steele, he's the CEO of the Enterprise Zone. So, Robert, this has been fabulous. We're going to have you back. So, go ahead and agree to that now, if you would, because you've got some great stories, my friend.
We could weave stories for days.
Let's do it. Yeah,
I'm happy to come back.
Yeah, thank you though. But seriously, for those that would like more information, how can they be in touch with you?
So my email address is robert@tezba.com. My cell phone, happy to give it out, 404-444-0457, which is easy to remember. And Steele here is my Twitter handle, STELLEHERE. And I can be found on LinkedIn as Robert H. Steele as well.
That's great. Robert Steele, he's the CEO of the Enterprise Zone. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, John.
Great to have you. Folks, if you need some help curing the headaches of administrative tasks, bookkeeping, marketing, presentations, or maybe a workshop you need planned, go engage a smart and reliable Office Angel. They're not a temp agency or a placement firm. Office Angels matches your business support needs with angels who have the talent and experience necessary to help you maintain and grow your business on an ongoing or as-needed basis. Your terms, your timeline. They lend a hand when needed, and they fly off when the job is finished. Find out more at officeangels.us or call Chief Executive Angel S.E. Escobedo at 770-442-9246. And folks, just a reminder, you can listen to this show. Normally, we've got one every Tuesday, but we do have special episodes along the way, like this one here with Robert. And if you miss any show and would like to look us up, we're at northfultonbusinessradio.com. You can go to that URL. There's a search bar there, and you can search by name, show, industry, a lot of different search terms to get to that CEO, that entrepreneur, that business leader that you would like to hear from. Our show is also on a number of different podcast apps, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Overcast, Google Podcasts as well. Quite a lineup of podcast apps, so sure to be on your favorite one if you take a look and search for North Fulton Business Radio. So for my guest, Robert Steele, I'm John Ray. Join me next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.
Today, you're connected more than ever. Your friends, your family, your life. And banking is what you do on your time, anywhere you like. Renaissance understands how you bank, offering mobile banking services you need. At Renaissance, we also understand that sometimes you need to speak to real people with real answers. That's why Renaissance has more than 170 convenient locations throughout the South ready to serve you. Renaissance Bank. Understanding You. Member FDIC.